stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the Shadow Storytellers. Have you ever seen a monster under your bed? If you saw it again today, would you still tremble? Or have the intervening years and their mundane cruelties numbed you to simple childhood terrors? One little girl has learned before her time that the most dangerous creatures on Earth don't have claws or tentacles or fangs. But instead of numbness, this knowledge will bring her a bloody adventure of unlikely friendship and revenge that we call A Tale of Two Monsters.
The creature below the girl's bed was born of fear and darkness. It was the thing you think you see moving out of the corner of your eye in a darkened room, the low snarl you try to tell yourself must have been the wind while walking home on a pitch-black night. Kira had never gotten a great look at the monster, but she knew its features well. A glossy black carapace, a long serpentine body, skittering insectoid limbs and pincers. Its mouth had long, curved teeth that looked like they could rend steel and blazing red eyes that threatened to make her wet her PJs whenever she saw them glowing under her bed. Kira listened down the hall for the sounds of her mother and father closing their bedroom door, and as soon as it shut, she pulled back her covers, climbed out of bed, and sat on the floor. It was a painful process, one that wouldn't have hurt so much only a year ago, but now was agony. It was like every one of her bones was suddenly made of fire, and on top of how weak she'd been feeling lately, it took biting her lip almost to the point of bleeding to keep from screaming out loud and alerting her parents. Lit only by the glow of her nightlight, one made to look like a cartoon character she'd never seen that cast a dim, multicolored light, her room felt particularly ominous now that she was alone. Well, nearly alone. The monster that lived beneath her bed had been what she had feared more than anything for as long as she could remember, but that didn't stop her from peering down into the darkness and calling to him. "Mr. Monster?" she whispered. "I know you're in there, Mr. Monster. I know you're in there, and I need to talk to you." Beneath her bed, there was only silence and blackness. It would have been easy to think that this was maybe all in her imagination, like Mommy always said, but she had seen the monster firsthand when he would periodically sneak out from under the bed at night to scare her before retreating to his hiding place. She knew he was real and how he could hide in the smallest of places even though he was so big. No, he was down there. She just had to give him enough reason to come out. "If you don't want to talk, Mr. Monster, then don't talk. I'll talk. Talking is about all I can do now. I can't play. I can't go to school. All I can do is talk and go to doctors, and I don't want to go to doctors now. I want to talk to you," Kira pleaded, looking into the darkness and hoping more than she'd hoped for anything that the monster would show. He didn't, but she could hear movement beneath the bed, a low shuffling, the faint clicks of his carapace pieces rubbing up against one another. "Please, Mr. Monster, I need to ask you something. I need you to..." This was hard for her to say. She thought she'd been strong enough, that she knew exactly what she needed to say and how, but that didn't make it any easier to actually do. Taking a painful breath, Kira finished. I need you to be a monster. I need you to eat me, to gobble me up, whatever you call it, Mr. Monster. Soon? Please. I won't scream, or fight, or nothing. I'll let you eat me, and I won't make it a problem." The low clicking and shuffling sounds beneath the bed stopped. Somewhere distant, deep beneath the bed and much farther away than she thought possible, she could have sworn she heard the low breathing of the beast. Then his eyes opened, all four of them glowing red and sharp as daggers, staring out from under the bed and at her. Into her. Thin, dark fingers shot out from under the bed and grabbed at the wooden frame as the legless creature propelled itself into the open. It slithered about her room quickly before rearing up on its long, massive tail, grabbing at the ceiling with several pairs of arms to hold itself aloft and staring down at the little girl, its biggest pair with the longest claws held out before it. The monster picked at its razor-sharp teeth with these claws, a pair of snake-like tongues slithering from its mouth to lick its eyes before retreating into its mouth. It cocked its head from one side to the other, looking down at Kira in a way that made her immediately regret calling out to him. She knew that asking this of him would be scary, but she hadn't gathered how scary it would be, like the difference between seeing a roller coaster and thinking it wasn't too bad and the feeling you had when you actually got to the front of the line. She should have run, called for her mother and father, or hidden beneath the covers. That had worked before, right? Yes, the covers had always sent the monster away before. He couldn't eat her under the covers. She should have. But it all hurt so much. Even with the pills, running would only be agony. No, as frightening as this was still for the best. With drool dripping from between its terrible teeth that it wiped away from its lipless mouth with one of its sickle-shaped claws, it spoke in a low, deep growl that filled Kira with a terror greater than any nightmare she'd had since knowing it lived beneath her bed. My name. What? Kira asked, her voice as quiet as a mouse. It continued. My name isn't Mr. Monster. Truth be told, my kind have never been too keen on names, but I prefer to be known for more than just what I am. Would you pick a name for me, Kira, so that we can set this conversation on more even terms? Kira's fright turned to confusion. This was not how she thought this night would go at all. She should have been Monster Chow ages ago. Still, she found a certain thrill at still being alive and set herself to finding a good name for the monster that lived under her bed. "Do you like the name Barry?" Kira asked after some thought. The monster licked its eyes again, then dropped a pair of its pincers from the ceiling so it could sweep back the quills on the back of its head. "Barry. It is a simple name, but not a bad one. I could be a Barry. Yes, yes, that will do. Now I am Barry." Barry swept his tail across the floor, wrapping it around Kira's stomach and under her legs with surprising gentleness, then lifted her up to the bed with a painless ease she appreciated. Barry set her down, then curled his tail on the floor to sit on it before dropping down from the ceiling. "I'm so sorry to see you like this, Kira. I should have said that sooner. I really should have, but communication with children is not our way. But since I am breaking all sorts of rules tonight, I will say that I am sorry to see you like this," Barry said, his low voice sympathetic. Kira was grateful for his kindness, unexpected as it was, but still confused. She asked, "So, aren't you going to gobble me up?" Barry laughed. "Good heavens, no. We monsters once ate meat and still can when we must, but find nightmares to be much more filling. Children's nightmares, filled with so many imagined fears, they are as delicious as... What is something you find particularly tasty?"
"Hawaiian pizza," Kira said enthusiastically.
Barry nodded.
"They are as delicious to us as your Hawaiian pizza. The bad dreams of grown-ups carry the sour taste of reality with them, but imagination... It is a cruel thing that we must torment you and instill fear in you if we wish to eat well, but it is a curse that has saved us from a life of violence and predation. Whether you believe it or not, I am filled with the greatest sorrow for causing as many of your nightmares as I have. I truly am."
"Huh,"
she replied, suddenly feeling bad for how many times she had wished Barry dead. He was just doing what he had to eat, and he hadn't really hurt her, had he? She asked.
"So, you're not such a bad guy, are you?"
He chuckled.
"For all I have done, I am certainly bad, but I have strived to never be evil."
"Oh, well, that's good," Kira replied.
Barry nodded his great head.
"And it is because I have strived to never be evil that I must ask you why you want me to gobble you up? Why the heck would you want me to do a silly thing like that?"
Kira sniffled, looking down at her bed and speaking weakly.
It's because I'm sick."
A glance at the girl could have told Barry as much. Kira had always been on the small side, but she appeared a shadow of her former self, pale and skinny, her eyes slightly sunken in and her raven hair replaced by a green knit cap. Barry had seen countless kids, Kira among them, sick before, but this was something exceptional to his experiences. He'd known her to be ill for a while now, but always expected her to get better because that was what kids did after long enough. Instead, Kira had only ever gotten worse. Though he was fairly certain of the answer, he had to question her. "Badly sick?" he asked. Kira nodded. "Cancer. The Big C, Daddy calls it. It's been like this for a long time now. Everything hurts in me. It hurts so much I can't really sleep or do anything anymore. I can't eat, I can't play. All I can do is be sick."
That's awful, Barry admitted. "I'm sorry."
Kira tried to hold back some serious tears.
"I'm sorry, too. I don't want to be like this. I don't want cancer, but what I want doesn't matter, right?"
"Less often than one would usually like in this world, unfortunately," Barry replied.
She stopped trying to hold back her tears.
"The hurt is bad enough, but then I have to see what it does to Mommy and Daddy. Every day I see them try not to cry, and every night I hear them through the wall. Sometimes they're crying, sometimes they're fighting, but it's always something, and that something is bad, and they never did any of that before."
Barry stroked his mandibles again, thoughtful. Though most monsters abided by a code of non-interference when it came to interactions with the children they fed upon, Barry was having a hard time following those rules in this case.
"Is there nothing that can be done for you?" Barry asked.
Kira sniffled.
"There is. There was. There's a place they were supposed to take me, the Nobi Clinic, this special place that fixes what I have, and it costs a lot of money. I was going to go there and get their help, but then Mommy and Daddy got some other people to help instead, only they didn't help, and now they got all our money. I should be at the good clinic now, getting fixed, getting better."
Barry leaned down to better look her in the eyes as she kept getting smaller and smaller on the bed. He asked, "What happened that changed this? Tell me in detail, please." The little girl kept shrinking on her bed, nearly rolling into a ball even as the agony surged through her body. This wasn't how she expected anything to go, and now that she was being confronted by the problem instead of having it ended quickly by the monster under her bed, she felt unbelievably tired.
"I should go to bed," she said.
Barry nodded sympathetically.
"I know you must rest, but please, I want to know."
Her voice was so soft that Barry had to open one of his great, bat-like ears extra wide to best hear her.
Kira said, "They met the Thoughts and Prayers Man."
Barry cocked his head, curious.
"Who is the Thoughts and Prayers Man?"
She explained.
"Mommy and Daddy, they kept going to different doctors, and they were getting upset that no one was fixing me quick enough. They wanted me better now, and when they heard about the clinic, it sounded like it might be too much time and too much money for them. While I was playing in the waiting room at one doctor's office, they met this lady. She said that she knew someone who could help with what I was fighting right away if they could just think different."
Kira's face darkened.
"She led us to him. He's a man in a nice suit with a big and shiny smile, but the smile doesn't go to his eyes. He said that my parents were trying to fix me the wrong way, that doctors and medicine and all that wasn't helping me, that it was making me sicker. They didn't want me sicker. I didn't want me sicker. He told them that it was okay, that everyone makes mistakes, and that he used to be a doctor. That sounded good to Mommy and Daddy, and it sounded good to me. He said there were different ways of fixing me, better ways, potions and tonics and things like that. But most important, he said, was the power of thoughts and prayers. He said nothing was more powerful than thoughts and prayers, and that he knew a lot of people who would send their thoughts and prayers to make me better if they gave him some of their money."
Tears were flowing freely down her cheeks now. Reaching across the room without moving from his place, Barry grabbed a tissue from a box on one of Kira's bookshelves and handed it to her. When it became clear that the effort of dabbing at her own eyes might hurt her, he reached up and did this for her, her gratitude bringing a smile to his clicking mandibles. She continued,
"I did feel better. I don't know what was in those potions that was different from medicine, but it made me feel better for a little while. I was happy, I didn't hurt so much. He said that the thoughts and prayers were working, that thoughts and prayers could fix all the problems in the world if people just accepted them. They kept giving him money, and they kept giving me all these funny-tasting things he would give them. And then one day they didn't have the money to give him, and the thoughts and prayers man disappeared. Some big guys, angry guys, came to our door and said they were supposed to get the money they owed him. Daddy said he didn't have it. So they hurt Daddy, and they broke our stuff, and they took things, and now nobody knows how to find the thoughts and prayers man. Mommy and Daddy have no money. They can't pay any bills. Mommy had to sell her car, and I'm going to die. But maybe if I die sooner, they won't keep trying to spend money on me, and don't have to be sad for as long, and... So I asked you if you would eat me up. Barry looked down at the girl, thinking about everything that she had said. He had never spent any serious time talking to a human, and found it not as unpleasant an experience as he had expected. His kind had a habit of hiding from humanity unless they needed to inspire an odd nightmare or two. After all, it wouldn't do to put a name and personality toward the person whose darkest thoughts you meant to feast on, right? Then you might hold back on them. Then you might starve. And that wouldn't do. Barry had never been good at that. He had always been curious about what happened above the bed and beyond the closet door, and he'd found it easy to inspire enough fear that he wouldn't starve without making the child live there every moment in abject terror. Perhaps the others were right, though, about keeping distance. Seeing Kira sitting on her bed, so pitiful and frail and at the end of her wits, begging to be eaten by a monster that had until recently been her greatest fear, he doubted he could cause another of her nightmares, let alone eat one. By Barry's reckoning, there were problems afoot, and problems demanded to be solved. He could solve these problems, with adequate preparation. "Do you still want me to eat you?" he asked. She replied in a small voice,
I don't know.
"I do not wish to eat you, Kira, but I will do it if this is what you really want," Barry proposed. Kira thought about this.
"Will it hurt?"
"Quite a bit," he replied. She shivered.
"I don't like hurting."
Barry nodded. "Then I propose we handle this matter in a different fashion."
"What?"
Kira asked. He grinned and then asked, "Do you remember where you last saw this thoughts and prayers man?" Kira thought, then slowly shook her head.
"No. We would visit him at lots of different places."
Barry murmured. "Perhaps I could find some information on him in one of your parents' phones."
"No!"
Kira said, her voice loud for the first time since he'd crawled from under her bed.
"Don't, please. You'll scare them, and they've been scared enough lately, and I don't want them to be scared anymore."
"Very well," he replied, nodding, then looked over to the phone on Kira's bedside table. "Is that yours?"
"Yes,"
she said, reaching over to pick up her phone.
"Mommy and Daddy didn't want me to have one before I got sick, but now that I spend so much time going to doctors, the games are nice."
"I understand," Barry replied, smiling. The smile did little to calm her, and since he imagined he looked quite awful to her eyes, he stopped smiling. "Is there anything of him on your telephone?" Kira looked down sadly for a moment before her face brightened. Quickly, she unlocked her phone, scrolling through pictures before landing on one that looked like it might have been taken at a nearby park. A slightly healthier-looking Kira sat in a wheelchair with her parents on either side, and a big, handsome man with golden hair behind her, one of his big hands on Kira's shoulder.
"That's the thoughts and prayers man," she said, excited.
Barry only needed a glance at the picture to get what he needed, but for Kira's benefit, he looked at it long and hard, tracing the tip of one of his claws over the picture of the man and growling.
"Thank you, Kira. That will be all," Barry said, slithering over to the other side of the room and cracking her window open.
"What are you doing?" Kira asked.
Barry looked back at her, cocking his head in lieu of giving her another smile that might unsettle her.
"Something. I do not know how long I will be, but when I return, I will have done something. I am uncertain if it is in time enough to save you, but I will do something about this. You have my word, Kira."
and with that, he pressed himself against the window. Kira watched with some awe as the massive monster easily slipped through the gap in the window that couldn't have been more than half an inch, soon to disappear entirely into the night. Already, she was eagerly awaiting his return. The next day came and went with no sign of Barry, and Kira began to worry. She didn't worry too much, because a lot of things in life took time. Spending the last year in waiting rooms had taught her that, and even if she didn't like it, she'd grown a sense of patience in this time. The following 2 days after that passed much the same, and Kira began to despair. After the fourth day passed, accompanied by another painful trip to a doctor even she didn't think was very good, Kira was beginning to wonder if Barry wasn't real at all. The other doctors had said that the cancer hadn't spread to her brain yet, but that when it did, she might see things that weren't there. Maybe it had finally gotten there, or maybe it had been there all along and they just missed it. But that didn't feel right. No, Barry was real. As real now as during all that time he'd lived under her bed and eaten her dreams, and he had made her a promise. She knew she couldn't believe in thoughts and prayers because they were just words, but Barry was real, and even if his promise was just words, the look in all of his eyes wasn't. He would keep his promise. She knew it. It was on the fifth day after she had called out to the monster under her bed that the knock on the door came, and Kira's mother came to her bedroom looking simultaneously pleased and baffled. "Kira?" she said. "We have a visitor who would like to see you." Briefly, Kira's heart soared at the thought that Barry had come back with some good news. The thrill didn't last very long, however, when she realized that there was no way that Mommy and Daddy would be as excited to see Barry. To them, he'd just be an ugly old monster, and they would probably just be very upset if he showed up at their front door. With her glee deflated, Kira let her mother load her into the creaky, wobbly wheelchair they had stationed in her room and roll her down the hall toward the front door. As she had expected, Barry wasn't there. As she hadn't expected, the Thoughts and Prayers Man was. He stood there in one of his immaculate white suits with the pale blue bow tie, his bronzed skin as even as ever, and his wavy blonde hair slicked back without a single strand out of place. There was once a time when Kira thought the Thoughts and Prayers Man looked positively angelic, but now the sight of him simply made her sick. As usual, his smile was broad and toothy and nearly as white as his suit, and also as usual, the smile didn't reach his eyes. However, there was something different to his baby blue eyes this time. They lacked that faint meanness to him that Kira had become used to, instead showing something that might well have been fear. Her heart beat a little faster, but she dared not allow herself to hope too much. Not yet, anyway. Sitting at his feet was an open duffel bag, piles of money visible inside. That was probably the only reason that Mommy and Daddy hadn't thrown him out yet, but Kira was still nonetheless confused at the sight before her. "All right, so that's everyone, yes?" he said, licking his lips nervously. "Good. I'm glad you could all come and let me speak my piece today." A little twitchy from his last encounter with the Thoughts and Prayers Man's business associates, Kira's father reached for a baseball bat he now kept next to the door and said, "Let's get this over with, and then you get the hell off my property." "Right, yes," the Thoughts and Prayers Man said, eyes darting to the left as if worried by something he saw near the side of the house. "I don't want to keep you any longer than I have to, for there is much I have to do today, yes, much that needs to be done in atonement. It is to you, of course, that I must atone first. That is so clear to me now, which is why I begin with an apology." He squeezed his fists nervously, eyes darting to the side once more before he began. "I'm sorry for allowing my wickedness into your lives. I have lived a sinful life. I can see that now, and I have to fix that while I still can. And so that is why I want to give back every single last cent I took from your family, plus some extra for interest. It's all there and more. Feel free to count it if you want to." Kira's mother snapped. "If you think this is going to earn you our forgiveness..." "I'm not asking for it," the Thoughts and Prayers Man interjected. "You're free to keep whatever opinions you want of me, for I surely have earned them. All I ask is your time to let me apologize to each and every one of you for what I've done wrong." Kira's mother looked like she wanted to argue this matter, but instead knelt down and grabbed the duffel of money as if worried the Thoughts and Prayers Man might snatch it away. "This money isn't stolen, is it?" "Only from you," he answered, nervously running a hand through his glorious golden hair. "Only from you." "Good,"
Kira's father said, gripping the bat tightly. You've given our money back. Now get the hell off my property before I make you leave.
He raised the bat slightly, and it did make the thoughts and prayers man flinch, but he didn't move.
The money is only the first atonement. I still have gifts for each of you that I must give before I'll be allowed to leave, he said, his voice hitching slightly as he said the last few words.
Kira's parents didn't seem to notice the emphasis he put on the latter part of that sentence, but she caught it well. She had always had a keen ear for the minutiae of how adults talked, because they always tried to talk in a way where they thought they could hide things from children. Doctor spoke to her in those tones all the time, and she had learned to read between their lines well enough. Someone was making the thoughts and prayers man do this. Knowing who that must be, that brought a smile to Kira's face.
What kind of gifts? Kira's mother asked as she counted the money.
Reaching into his pocket, the thoughts and prayers man tossed a key fob her way. He explained,
On the curb out front, you'll find a black SUV. It's last year's model, but she's been well taken care of. Less than 5,000 miles. I hear my dirty deeds have made you sell your car, and I want to give you one from my personal collection. On the back seat, you'll find newer, and might I add, superior, versions of all the electronic devices my associates took from your home during their visit.
Kira's mother thought about this.
Pink slip?
Reaching into one of his jacket pockets, he pulled out the folded piece of paper and handed it to her. He said,
Everything has already been signed over to you. All you need to do is sign and date, and it's all yours.
Without looking up at him, Kira's mother said,
Good.
Turning to Kira's father, the thoughts and prayers man continued,
As for you, well, I see that you have a baseball bat at the ready, and that will make this gift more convenient, if unpleasant. At my direction, my associates were unkind toward you, and I'm supposed to... What I mean to say is I want you to have the same opportunity with me. And so I would like to offer you 30 seconds to use that bat to do whatever you wish to me, a second for every second my men had with you.
Kira's father considered this, looking from his wife to his daughter. Kira looked up at her father curiously. He was a kind man, one who she doubted had ever raised his hands in anger in his life. It was true that, like anyone, he could have a temper, but she had a hard time imagining he could do what she so very much wanted him to do to the thoughts and prayers man. He looked uncertain, gripping and releasing the bat ever so slightly as he fought to decide. Nervously, Kira's father said to his wife,
Honey?
Without looking at either her husband or the thoughts and prayers man, she continued counting the money and said,
If you're going to do it, don't do it on my carpet. We can hose things down more easily in the backyard.
He looked to his daughter, a certain fire hiding in his kind eyes as he sought permission for a vengeance normally against his character.
This man is a very bad man, right, honey?
Reaching out to him, Kira smiled and said,
You'll do the right thing.
Smiling almost as much as he was shaking, Kira's father said to the thoughts and prayers man, Well, you heard my lovely wife. Let's go to the backyard. The thoughts and prayers man's smile flickered oh so slightly, his eyes once again darting to the side. Kira thought that by the look on his face, he was hoping that her father wouldn't have it in him, that he was every bit as harmless as he looked and, indeed, generally was. Clearly, he hadn't expected how much her father's beating at the hands of his goons had affected him. The thoughts and prayers man held back shaky hands as he followed Kira's father toward their backyard and out of Kira's sight. Briefly, there was a shriek of raw pain from the backyard, enough to stab at Kira's heart in a way she didn't expect. Kira's mother, on the other hand, was unfazed.
He wasn't lying, she said, zipping up the duffel bag of money. Every bit we gave him and more is in here. I don't know how or why this has happened, but a miracle's a miracle. I'm not one to turn it down, especially when we've needed a miracle for you so bad.
Kira did know where this miracle had come from, but knew better than to say anything about it. There was no way Mommy or Daddy would believe her if she told them. Looking at her mother and trying to drown out the dull cries of pain and sounds of heavy, wet impacts she heard occurring in the backyard, Kira said,
I'd like a miracle.
Her mother looked up at Kira with a smile, the first smile Kira could recall seeing on her pretty face in a very long time.
This is a miracle, and then some. If it's not too late, we'll be able to get you fixed up in no time.
The ugly, violent noises in the backyard stopped.
There was a moment of silence, one where Kira wondered if her father had gone too far, if he might have even killed the thoughts and prayers man. By her reckoning, that wouldn't have been that terrible a thing, but she didn't want her father to go to jail, either. Thankfully, she soon heard the sound of the back door opening and her father talking.
I'm sincerely sorry, honestly. I didn't expect to get that carried away, he explained, sounding more embarrassed than sorrowful.
But when you said I only had 30 seconds, I wanted to make the most of it, you know? That makes sense, right? Are you sure you don't want some Tylenol? Maybe a shot of rum? In a pained voice, the thoughts and prayers man replied,
It's all right. I deserved this.
When they both re-entered the room, Kira understood why they were talking this way. Her father was panting and out of breath, cleaning blood from the baseball bat with an old towel he now used as a rag, while the thoughts and prayers man... Well, he didn't look so angelic anymore as he limped into the room. His face was bloodied and bruised, with several of his teeth missing or shattered and one eye swollen shut enough that he could barely see out of it. His suit was rumpled and torn, its brilliant white fabric streaked with blood as his bow tie lay in shambles on his chest. Gingerly, he held his left arm, which lay limply at his side. One of their towel rags lay over his shoulder, no doubt gifted by her father. Kira's mother looked up at him briefly, then said, Don't you dare bleed on my carpet, or I'll be looking for some of that bat time, too.
Right. Sorry,
the thoughts and prayers man said, limping out the front door and standing back on the porch again. He tried darting his eyes to the side again, and upon finding that difficult, he sighed. Thank you, Kira's mother said, her voice all acid. Does our daughter get a present from you, too? For all you did to her, she better. The thoughts and prayers man looked into Kira's eyes, smiling at her hopefully. Now full of blood and broken teeth, it wasn't nearly as charming a smile as he might have intended, but he was clearly glad that this was almost over. It looked like he wanted to kneel in front of her, but with one of his legs at an odd angle, he clearly thought better of it. The look in his one good eye spoke to a man who was looking for absolution from her, but it was something she couldn't, and wouldn't, give him. Not after everything he had done to her family.
Two gifts, actually, he explained, reaching into his pocket and pulling out a key.
He reached out to hand it to Kira, but before he could, her mother intercepted it and took it from him before giving it to Kira herself. The thoughts and prayers man explained,
The first gift is right outside. Attached to the back of your mother's new SUV, you'll find a rather large portable storage unit positively bursting with toys. I didn't know what you liked, so I got you a little bit of everything I could find at the toy store. I know it won't make what I did better, but I hope it's something that you'll have fun with.
Kira craned her neck, trying to get a look outside. When she couldn't see it, she asked,
What's the second gift?
Quietly, the thoughts and prayers man said, Life, I hope. Kira's father looked at him and asked, What do you mean? The thoughts and prayers man took a breath. With the help of a very generous donation out of my own pocket, I got your daughter accepted into the Nobi Clinic. All of her treatments and surgeries are already paid for, as are 3 plane tickets to get you there 3 days from now. There's accommodations on site for all of you to stay while she's being treated. Though Kira's mother had been staring daggers at the man the entire time he was here, at this announcement she dove for him, hugging the thoughts and prayers man tightly. She still looked furious and maybe even a little confused with herself, but he had brought a miracle with him worthy of a quick, impulsive hug.
Thank you, she said.
Shrieking slightly, the thoughts and prayers man replied,
You're welcome, but please let me go. I think your husband broke my left arm.
Kira's mother may have held him a little longer for knowing she was causing him pain, but ultimately did let him go, unmindful of his blood on her clothes as he painfully stepped away from her.
Thank you for all of this, Kira's father said, his voice shaking with gratitude. But if that's all, please get the hell off my property.
Darting his good eye to the side one final time, the thoughts and prayers man said,
I shall do that, and once again, my apologies for all of this.
Looking down at Kira one last time, he tipped her a simple nod. She didn't return it, but once the front door was closed behind him, she let out a deep breath she'd been holding in. She didn't know how he had done it, but Barry had held to his promise. She had a chance now. A really good chance. She was going to live, and everything might just be fine after all.
Thank you, Barry, she whispered.
What was that, sweetie? Her mother asked. Kira smiled brightly.
Can we order some Hawaiian pizza for dinner tonight while I play with my new toys and celebrate?
In all his years of cons and lies, Evan McSweeney had learned one hard and fast rule. You win some, you lose some. It didn't make losing any easier, but in any situation with uncertainty, it helped to know that simple fact. Over time, he had learned as many ways as he could for lowering the chances of losing, and had formed a pretty sizable nest egg from those best angles. People loved their sick children, after all, and seemingly loved blind faith just as much. Spin a tale of the powers of thoughts and prayers, dope up their kids a little, take their thanks when offered, and apply the screws when they start to get wise. It was an easy racket, one that had worked for a while now, and one that he had hoped would get him into an early retirement. This last one, though? That was definitely a loss. A big loss. Walking the several blocks toward the meeting place with his tormentor, bloodied and broken and in abject agony, he had never felt so humiliated in his life. At any other time, he would be plotting vengeance, but today... well, today he was just hoping he'd end it with his life. Still clutching his left arm, he finally found the parking lot behind the defunct fast food restaurant and slowly climbed into the driver's seat of the nondescript sedan parked there. The dripping duffel bag on the passenger seat hadn't moved an inch, and while he couldn't look at it, he couldn't ignore it either. For a second or two, Evan wondered how long he would have to wait for his tormentor. He needn't have wondered much. "You did well, thoughts and prayers, man," the creature growled from the back seat. Evan shuddered at the wet, sickly sound of the monster's voice. "We're done here, right?" Evan asked, his voice more nasally than he could ever remember it for his shattered nose. I did what you said. I made it right. You're gonna let me go now, right? Because I gotta get to a hospital." The beast shuffled in the back seat slightly, then leaned forward to speak in Evan's ear. "We are done when I say we are done, monster. If I were to demand you to walk to the gates of hell itself, I would expect you to ask me which path you should take. Do you understand?" Evan flinched from the monster's words. He had gotten used to flinching when in its presence over these past couple days he'd been its prisoner, but knowing all too well what the consequences were, he knew better than to defy the beast. "Yes, sir, Mr. Barry, I understand," he replied, his voice weak. The monster chuckled. "Only Barry will be necessary, and I have no intention of asking you to march to the gates of hell." "Well, that was comforting, at least," Evan asked. "Then what do you want?" One of the monster's many claws darted between the seats, pulling the phone from Evan's pocket and dropping it into his lap. "I want for you to call the police and make a full confession of all of your crimes," Barry explained. "You will find in the trunk of this car boxes containing all of your electronics and your ledgers that well illustrate the depths of your wrongdoing. And while we're at it, why don't you also confess to the murders of your friends beside you? Their deaths are on your hands, after all." Evan gulped, looking back at the bag on the passenger seat. When Barry had approached him 2 days ago, Evan thought he'd lost his mind, but when the creature had showed him the severed heads of his enforcers, Jack and Diego, and his spotter who found desperate families at the cancer clinics, Carla, Evan knew the situation to be terribly real. Over the course of the past 2 days, Barry had made it clear that he could not talk his way out of this and what would happen if he didn't comply. "And if I do this, you'll hold to your promise?" Evan asked. The creature nodded. "If you do this, I will leave you in peace. You will live out the rest of your miserable life in a prison of your own making, but under no threat from me. I will check up on you periodically to make sure you are being good, though, so don't think you can continue your cons from behind bars. Is that clear?" "Crystal," Evan answered, gulping. And so, after looking up the police non-emergency number, Evan dialed it up. Barry leaned forward from the back seat, listening in. As soon as the operator picked up and asked him why he was calling, the con artist answered, "Hello, my name is Evan McSweeney, and I have a whole hell of a lot of crimes to confess to." Barry waited just long enough for the first sirens to start ringing in the distance before he squeezed through a cracked window and slithered away. He hid in the shadows behind a dumpster, waiting and watching as the police cars drove up and surrounded the thoughts and prayers man. Satisfied that he was being arrested and arrested violently, the serpentine monster slithered into the darkness. As a creature born of fear and darkness, Barry had to admit that justice didn't taste quite as sweet as a child's nightmares,
but there was something to it that was filling all the same. Saving Kira's life brought a greater satisfaction than bringing terror into it ever could, and it was something that he looked forward to trying again. Though it brought a hint of sadness into his heart that he wouldn't see Kira again, the monster knew well that his skills would be needed elsewhere. Slithering away from the arrest, Barry began to search. There were plenty of children out there like Kira, after all. Children in pain. In fear. And if a guardian angel wasn't going to swoop in and save them, then perhaps a monster should.
A Tale of Two Monsters was written and performed by Matt Carter. Narration was provided by Fiona J. Artichinel. This episode was edited by Matt Carter and Fiona J. Artichinel. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Tichinel. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. For more information on the Shadow Storyteller's podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.weebly.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for updates on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.